America Meditating Radio Show, we collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts 24/7. Hi, I'm Sister Jenna. Join me and guests on Blog Talk Radio as we amplify stories that compel us to be more for ourselves and everyone else around us. Take a break, breathe. Why don't you visit the Peace Village Learning and Retreat Center, 518-589-5000. The Meditation Museum in Silver Spring, Maryland offers a variety of courses and activities to make your life go a whole lot smoother. Located at 9525 Georgia Avenue, you will be able to experience the beautiful silence that's in the space. There are courses in Raja Yoga Meditation, positive thinking, stress-free living, and personal development classes. For more information, call us at 301-588-0144 or visit us online at meditationmuseum.org.
He ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Persistence. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to America Meditating Radio, maybe one of your favorite online radio stations in the world. I'll tell you this, I think I've appreciated our journey together. Just the simplicity and the purity, but perhaps more than anything else is the content and the quality of conversations that we have together over the air with some of our incredible guests and friends. We're looking forward to our upcoming retreat, which is for a lot of our friends and fans of the AM show. And so we've been preparing for that quite intently. And because it's coming around, you know, right before voting, we're also going to be adding some interesting dynamics in terms of our role of awareness and consciousness to create a lot of peace and harmony in our country. As much as I know that the antagonist moves the story forward and we must accept that they have a role to play and that their part is very meaningful and very impactful, at the same token, I think we all have the power of choice to see it's what side we wish to put our energy in. And I think for many of us who listen to the show or even for myself, I want to always be on the side in life or in my many, many lives, the side of construction, development, sustainability, that which continues to breathe divinity and truth and beauty in our world. And of course, when I bump into the antagonist, I think it'll be a very interesting encounter, but I want to stay true to myself. And I believe that might be the same for you. Look at a relationship that you're in or a circumstance that you're in, or maybe do a little mini life review and see what emerges inside of your consciousness, inside of your feelings. Is there a sense of loss? Is there a sense of regret? Is there a sense of growth? Is there a sense of reconciliation, harmony, appreciation for the part? I know that for me, I could always see areas where I could have done better. There was just a part that I feel like, I could have spoken more like this. Perhaps I shouldn't have pushed too much. Perhaps I could have been a little bit more mindful of the person's feelings. And why life reviews are so important is that they're there not to have you suffer about what you didn't do right, but they're there to help us as to what we can do better when that other scene comes in front of us. So whether it's in the face of an antagonist or just a poor choice that we might have made in our past, do your life reviews and seeing what way you can keep amplifying a better design of yourself, a better diagram, a better image, a better portrait of you. And accept that even when you're done masterminding that one, another scene just might come and encourage you to shift that story and make it even something different. So who knows? We're always trying to redo ourselves or get back up on track, but it's definitely a time of spirituality, and it's definitely a time for us to really lean into ourselves more so that we can create a world that's golden aged, a world that has this time period, like it's just at peace with itself. It's just cool, you know? So hold on, because we're going to have Alan Sire with us, and he's going to be having a conversation with us about all the amazing things that he's doing and to just talk about his novel and some other work that he's been up to. And before I get Alan on the air, I'd like us to do our meditations together, to go into this whole awareness of letting go and still leaning in. And from my Off the Grid into the Heart Meditation CD, I invite you to let go and send peace to the self, peace to your close companions on your journey, and peace to our nation. Breathe in deeply. Om Shanti. The time that we choose to be aware doesn't necessarily require me to just sit and meditate. But even while I walk and move around, I can be in a meditative awareness, which is awareness of the soul, the original, eternal, imperishable being of light. For a little while, I'd like to invite you to be present, to be here, and to be now. Allow your mind to settle in the moment, to relax. This meditation is about awareness. It's about becoming aware of your original and eternal self. About connecting to your truth. Let go of your name. And observe yourself feeling nameless. Let go of your gender. Discontinue thinking you're a man or a woman. Let it go and observe how you would feel walking around without a gender. Let go of the role that you play and let go of the titles that you own. Observe how you're feeling as you are gradually letting go. Let go of your religion and put it aside just for now. And let go of your nationality and even the language that you're accustomed to. Imagine you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, nationality, or even a language. Ask yourself, how do you feel at this moment? And in this feeling, who would think of you and who would you think of? The Supreme Soul would think of you, and you, the liberated soul, would think of the Supreme. In this state of absolute freedom, I am truly who I am. A free peaceful, pure, immortal, and eternal soul. Allow yourself to just be absorbed in this awareness. This time, welcome back. That was Letting Go from the Off the Grid Into the Heart Meditation CD. And for the next few months up until Election Day, the America Meditating Radio Show really wishes to keep amplifying just the consciousness of peace and harmony and unity. You can still have difference of opinions, but still remain civil and mature. And we're really amplifying and inviting everyone that's in this condition or this consciousness of who's going to be the next leader of the superpower to really begin to look into how we can keep representing the best in the world at this time. Our thoughts and good wishes go out to Belgium, to the folks in Brussels. Again, it continues to just remind me of when we have had that one final last negative thought, that we can't seem to stop holding the sorrow inside. We have to let others participate in our sorrow. So we do things like suicide bombing or shooting up places or just what I would call just unnecessarily ways of expressing that you need attention. And so lots of our good wishes are going out to Brussels. And kudos to President Obama, one of the first presidents in decades that's visited Cuba. And what a great choice. Someone who has been just leading very quietly with virtues. And I'm not going to get into the political dimension because I'd say it for Bush or for Clinton. It doesn't matter what your Democratic Party is. But come on, call a good deed when you see it. And call a good deed something important in a time when people are tired of fighting and people are tired of dealing from an energy of lack and people need to see images of reconciliation, forgiveness, and hope, things that you keep studying in your scriptures that are telling you how to be a better person. And I think that takes me to our incredible guest, award-winning producer Alan Sayre. You see, Alan has produced 8 award-winning documentaries on subjects ranging from Eastern spirituality in the Western world, to the criminal justice system, boxing, breakthroughs in the treatment of diabetes, baseball, and so much more. All of this follows Alan's work as a writer, director, and producer on projects as diverse as the Buddy Holly story, remember that? In HBO's Rebound with Don Cheadle, Forest Whitaker, James Earl Jones, as well as music videos and commercials. Now, in the world of music, Alan even produced an album of Ray Charles' love songs. He's written countless liner notes and has done stuff like managing even a little bit with Ike Turner. He is co-host radio shows and he does a segment on an internet boxing show. He has been a faculty member at a number of prestigious institutions. You get an idea of who Alan is, right? So all of these immensely different and rewarding experiences have served as the prelude to and background for his new novel, The Beard. Today, we're honored to welcome Alan Sayre to the America Meditating Radio Show. Alan, thank you for being on the air, and thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure entirely. It's really nice to be here. And I really, in light of what's going on in the world, I'm thrilled that you said what you did before I came on. That was great.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. I really want to create some kind of a neutrality because I know how impactful our radio show is, and I think if we can keep rippling out, it's okay to take sides, but can we just be a little bit more mature and civil regarding that? It's okay for different, but now I think the call of time is asking us to be divine, you know, just to be divine.
Absolutely.
Even for different.
Very well said. Very well said.
Well, congratulations on your wonderful life. You have been in areas that I just dream about, writing, hanging out with Ike, doing HBO series. And, you know, just how rewarding because, you know, Alan, the media is such an impactful tool. And if you can participate in areas of the media where it's helping people to think at a unique level or at a different level of awareness of themselves, I think it's profound. What was it that got you into this particular genre of expressing yourself?
Well, the novel came about in a very funny way. You mentioned my involvement with Ray Charles, who became a very close friend. And Ray started teasing me at a certain point. Hey, you know, I like what you're doing, but why don't you write a novel? And I said, Ray, that's not what I do. I'm a filmmaker. I've got my fingers in the music world. I'm an activist. He said, no, you got to do it. You got to do it. And he dared me to do it. And I said, gee, Ray, you know, it means time. And I don't know if I can. You know, it's, after a certain point in time, it's a little bit daunting to do something totally different. It came a point with the documentaries where I realized that I was really making life hard for my film editors. In other words, if I was hovering, they couldn't really, I was turning them into techs. Instead of bringing them, instead of allowing them to use their own creativity to add, they were doing my bidding. So I said, okay, we'll have conversations about what needs to be done, then I'll disappear for a little while. Well, I'm not about to go on the tennis tour or the pro tennis tour or the pro golf tour. So what am I going to do? So I started writing short stories. And to my amazement, they found homes in literary magazines very quickly. And Ray's words kept ringing in my ears. So one day I said, you know what, let me give it a try. And I didn't know anything. I mean, I'm fairly conversant in how things work in film and in music, but I didn't know anybody in the publishing world. But when I finished the draft of the novel, the editor of a magazine that's published several of my stories asked what I was doing, and I said, well, strangely enough, I'm writing a novel. She said, may I read it? So I said, sure, why not? I sent it to her, and she said, I love this. What are you going to do with it? And I said, I have no idea. She said, well, I know there's a publishing house that I think would really respond to this. Can I put them in touch with you? And I said, please, that'd be great. You know, which goes to what you were saying earlier, that there should be a sense that we're all interconnected. Anyway, she did that. The woman at the editor at the publishing house, which is called Harvard Square Editions, asked if she could read two chapters. And I said, you know what? I don't think you'll get a real feel for the book in two chapters. I'll send you three or four. Read as much as or as little as you'd like. She said, fine. Mm-hmm. She got back to me and said, may I read the rest of the book? And I said, you know, with pleasure, sent it off, and then proceeded to forget about it. I'm not somebody who sits and wonders what is going on if there's nothing that I can do to help it. So one day I got an email, we love this. And my immediate response was, who's we? lo and behold, a contract appeared, and the book will be published April 2nd, though I just heard that even though it's up for pre-sale on Amazon, they're actually sending out copies. So I discovered that when somebody called me yesterday and said, I love your book. And I said, but it's not out yet. Oh, yes, it is. It's in my hands. So, but, you know, in keeping with what you were saying, in the best of all worlds, we should be in it together. In the best of all worlds, our humanity should supersede the differences that we have.
So true, so true. Now, what has been like the spiritual connection that you have felt after writing the book, which is called The Beard, correct?
Correct.
What's
interesting is a sense of being at one with the world, that there was something, you know, that Ray's words kept resonating, and I felt somehow incomplete. I felt as though I was walking through life almost with one hand tied behind my back. And I think that that's what spirituality does. I was very fortunate. I wish I'd known you then, but when I did a documentary called Spiritual Revolution about Eastern spirituality in the Western world, the emphasis was really on meditation. And I came at it from a different point of view. In addition to interviewing swamis and gurus and rinpoches and Zen masters and the like, I also interviewed on camera scientists, the woman at Harvard Med School who's using New Age technology to study the cortex of meditators, and she's discovered that she can reverse that, meditating can actually reverse the aging process, which is amazing. But I realized that what meditation does, what spirituality does, or should, is meant to do, is to open people up to their whole self so that they're not, they're bigger than who they think they are. They're better than who they think they are. They can accomplish more than the limitations that they've accepted somehow, because a lot of what we do through life is about, sadly, is about surrendering. You know, and it starts, hopefully not in the home, but it starts at school where you hear when somebody says, somebody asks a silly question, like, does neatness count? No, it should be spirituality and creativity that count, not neatness. You know, when we stumble is when we learn. When we're messy when we're trying to do new and different things. And interesting, in The Beard, the protagonist is a young guy who's been kind of suffocating, if you will, in New Jersey, which is where I'm from originally, as you can probably tell from my accent. So there, there are autobiographical aspects to it. He gets a job. He applies for an internship in Southern California, assuming that this is going to be a door opening, the likes of which always dreamed about. He gets there only to discover on the first day, when the first meeting of all the interns, they're all told, look to your left, look to your right. At least one of you won't be here 6 weeks from now.
Wow.
And he comes to discover that those who are going to be promoted are largely preordained. They're the sons and daughters of the rich and powerful, and that he's just fodder, or will be, unless he can find some way to make himself indispensable. And he realizes that, why should I accept the constraints that when they're, each intern is asked to describe his or her background, and he's hearing people say, oh, my father is in who's who, and he gets frustrated and says, you know what, my father's in so what. But he's got to find his larger self, if you will, and finds himself advancing in a world that he realizes is filled with ruthless ambition and all sorts of things that he doesn't like, and he finds a better self. He realizes that he's got a truer calling than simply to make money, than simply to get a promotion. And that's his spiritual journey.
Wow. You know, because it's interesting, when you're a college student, you're supposed to be going to college to learn something so you can earn something. But I think many of us that even sit in the college, you know, we're always thinking about the earning rather than the learning, like how much am I actually going to start to make when I'm out of here. And I think that can sometimes just take over so much of our consciousness that we forget that the steps that we're taking, the people that we're meeting, the encounters that we're going through is our earning on a very deeply spiritual level. As to the person that we're going to show up to be, you know, we can either raise the world up through our teachings and being able to find the courage to be creative and the courage to be ourselves, or we can go the other route. Yeah, and just play that role where I don't think I'm good enough. And that's where I feel that when one meditates, one has to face one's self. And if you face yourself, you will develop the courage to know that you're much bigger than the way that you're thinking and living, or the way the world tells you to keep thinking and living. And so in terms of you, your meditation, how often do you meditate per day, or do you meditate?
I shoot for an hour a day. I'm not always successful at that. You know, I will own up to it. I'm not always successful at many things. But I think it's the continuity that matters more than judging oneself, gee, how long did I do it? And I, truthfully, I vary. I was, because of the film that I made, I had a very privileged kind of exposure to people ranging from Amma to Bob Thurman, who's, as you probably know, the first American made a lama by the Dalai Lama, father of Uma Thurman, which explains her first name, Bhagavan Das, all sorts of really, really interesting people. And so I've kind of actually my first exposure was to Muktananda many, many years ago, which was a really astonishing experience. So I vary it, not quite a Whitman sampler, but sometimes it's Zen. Sometimes it's what I learned from Muktananda way back when. Sometimes I'll put on a CD. If I'm really scattered, I'll put on a CD, because why should we shun technology?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's part of our world. And by the way, I loved what you were playing, you know, when I first called in. That was lovely.
You better. So that's my CD.
That's okay. That was a plug without even realizing it.
There you go. There you go.
But you know, because it's really important to have a center in this world. We're we're bombarded with stimuli, and we're bombarded with. I did some commercials, so I know how insidious they can be. Fortunately, mine were for music, so I wasn't peddling underarm deodorant. But they're meant to be insidious. They're worms making you feel insecure, making you feel little. If you don't have this product, you won't be hip, popular, cool.
You won't be right.
You know, so what the meditation does for me is to center me, to focus me, to get me away from all that stuff. And in the world of creativity, that's crucial.
It is, which I think we need more now than ever because of the technology that we've got at hand. There has never been really a guideline or a rule how much time you're supposed to stay on your smartphone or on your technology. And sometimes, I mean, I even find myself, Alan, sometimes I'll even look at my smartphone and just look at something that is trying to, I actually use it sometimes just to relax my mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, it's very unique that the times that we're in. And I want to ask you a question that I was asked in an interview by HuffPost Live about maybe a year or two ago. It was a year ago when I released the new CD. And I thought it was a very profound question. And I feel like your intellect will be able to give me a very unique response. Carol asked me on the interview, is Sister Jenna, you know, I hear all of you people doing all this meditation, yoga, and all this spiritual stuff. But really, what is the sum total of all of this? Like, what is the sum total of spirituality? And I thought, wow, love the question. Alan, I pass this question to you. In your mind,
to me,
in
spirituality,
your mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To me, spirituality.
The sum total.
The sum total is a sense of belonging to a larger and better world. Because
beautiful.
To me, spirituality comes down to one thing, one word more than anything else, interconnectedness.
Mm-hmm.
We are connected, or should be, to other people, to nature, to the planet, to the solar system. You know, all the commercials, all the rant radio that people hear, you know, and bad news, you know, people who get what I call CNN-itis or worse, Fox-itis, they become furious, they become enraged, and it's all about themselves, which is narcissism. And you know what? It's not. It's like if you see a kid throwing a temper tantrum, you can say, stop it, that doesn't do any good. But if you say, is that making you happy? Does that feel good? Sometimes it's like a Zen slap where the kid will say, wait a second, no. Well, why choose to be unhappy? Why choose to be enraged? Why choose to be caught up in yourself? Because when you're throwing a temper tantrum, what are you doing? You're being totally a prisoner of the worst side of yourself. As opposed to saying, you know, all the cliches have a basis in reality. Stop and smell the roses. You know what? Roses smell really good. It's really hard to be a stinker when you're saying, boy, this is lovely. And it's really hard to be furious when you say, wow, that is a lovely sunset. And it's really hard to be ticked off when you hear Ray Charles singing Hit the Road, Jack.
And that is so true. That's so true. And I think you're hitting a very strong point because since we are all interconnected and everything really connects to something, to what extent do I show up with it with reverence, even if it's something that I won't necessarily support in my life story? And it's a languaging, and it's an attitude, and it is a behavior that we can see in the world that we are thirsting to have this behavior expand in human
Absolutely.
Consciousness. Because I know that you do a segment called Uppercut on an
Exactly.
internet boxing show. And it also, and you also produced a documentary called El Boxeo, which chronicles how Hispanic boxers came to dominate the sport. Now, when I look at boxing, I cringe at times because I feel a little bit funny. Who was that woman's boxing match that happened about maybe 2-3 months ago? And
Ronda
she was a very
Holly Holm.
Yeah, and she got really slapped down, and it was a huge blow to her because she was a super champion. But just that sometimes I know it's a sport, I know what's behind it. But sometimes just when I see the brutality of it, I am challenged by myself not being affected by it. So why I'm asking you this question is that when we are on our path of spirituality, I should still be able to still look at a scene, which I might not necessarily say I would ever do that for myself, but still be able to honor and respect that and not be impacted by it. So here you are, you know, doing the segment on Uppercut. How does that impact you when you look at some of the images or deal with some of the images all the time? Does it shake you up, or you become immune to it, or you're more sitting in another place of consciousness?
Well, we live in a violent world, and I was in the front row when I thought Manny Pacquiao was dead in a fight against Juan Manuel Marquez in Las Vegas. I thought, oh my gosh, this is the end of the sport, because he didn't move. Fortunately, he did. He got up and he's fine. But I'm going to surprise you by telling you that a boxing gym is the single friendliest place in the world. For all the violence, there's a sense, I'm going to use a word, and let's make it gender-free. There's a boxing brotherhood, which has now expanded to include Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm and other female boxers. But if I go to watch a workout of a fighter I know or a trainer I know in a boxing gym, the minute I walk into the gym, every single person in there takes a moment to shake my hand. Every single person.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
When somebody leaves, you don't just leave a boxing gym. You walk, circumnavigate the entire room, and you shake everybody's hand. So, yes, there is great violence. Sadly, there's violence virtually everywhere. There's violence, you know, drive-by shootings, people cutting people off, guy on the subway if you're in New York City who chooses to elbow you.
Across the room,
he's chosen. There is violence, but it's violence without a sense of, again, interconnection. In the boxing world, yes, it's a microcosm, but in addition to the violence, and, you know, and there is an artistry to boxing, which some people don't recognize. I don't feel the same way towards mixed martial arts, which I think is thuggery. But there, beyond that, there's a sense of what we were talking about before. We are in this together, and, you know, I may hurt you, but I do not hate you, and I'm going to hope that you're okay. We're earning our living. We're sadly, these are, you know, nobody that I've ever heard of has awakened in Scarsdale or Beverly Hills and said, I think I want to be a boxer, and pursued that path. This is a way out. This is an opportunity for poor people to earn a living that, you know, sadly,
yeah,
you know,
I get that.
What's the key term today? Income inequality. It would be lovely if every child got a fair shake. That's not the case. That's simply not the case. So it's a way up. Further, boxers, there's a chauvinism attached to boxing. Mexican fight fans, Puerto Rican fight fans, black fight fans, Irish fight fans, German fight fans, British fight fans, they identify with their hero. It's not like a football team where you've got all these people and they're wearing helmets so you don't even know what they look like. So that, you know, why do I love boxing? Because I grew up as a boxer. I box. So, you know, it's in my blood, and I come from a blue-collar town, and the line that I always use is that I had the great and good fortune to be born poor. I learned that anything I wanted, I had to get on my own. But getting back to interconnectedness, and the character in the beard is very much like this. I had a support system in the street. I learned to ride a bike from the kids on the block. I learned to play baseball thanks to the kids on the block. I learned to play football and basketball thanks to the kids on the block. I learned to box at the police athletic league, not at the country club, because I couldn't go to a country club. The only way I could have gone to a country club is if I worked there as a caddy or a busboy or something.
Right.
You know, so that boxing to me became, there are different microcosms, and I think that the beauty is when people can live not just in one, in a hermetically sealed role, but in multiple realms. And for me, I'm lucky. I live in the world of music. I live in the world of film, and even there, film, TV, music videos, once upon a time commercials. Now in the world of novel writing, you know, baseball, basketball film. You mentioned Rebound. You know,
it's beautiful.
The world becomes larger.
It does. And why I ask that question is it's for all of us in this conversation, including our listeners, is to be able for us to keep amplifying and understanding that there's always going to be a story behind why you're seeing what you're seeing, or there's always even a virtue behind what you're seeing. And I think we're living our lives too much like as a commercial break when we look at something that's all we see, and we don't take the time, Alan, to really try to understand the heart of how this even emerged. Like you were saying, sometimes, you know, boxing has become a means to help people to really rise up in their own lives, similar to rap music and lots of other sports. And so how can we begin to keep conditioning, or let me not use the word condition, let me use the word how can we keep cultivating the ability to keep looking at what is it that I'm learning, what is it that is of a virtue here, what is it that is of hope in this image? Because we can't run away from violent stories. We hear them all the time on the news. We sometimes can't run away from our companions or our partners that we live with that just happen to have, you know, woken up in a bad mood that day. So how do we use our spiritual power to pass through that, to pass through those images that might not be always very comfortable? And that's where I really feel like that spiritual revolution is, where you really bypass just what's right there in front of you, but get to the core. And I think at the core of everything and everyone is something where there's a light, where there's divinity or goodness.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you were saying earlier, meditation is a way to step back and not be caught up in the emotions of the moment. It's a way to see the big picture, just as we have to learn, you know, parents have to learn that their little son or daughter is going to get a cold, is going to get a flu, is going to get a scraped knee, and sadly, that's important. First of all, you have to build up the immunities, but if you've never had any problem and suddenly you go out into the world and something happens, if you don't understand the big picture, oh, I will get better, I will be okay, you could panic. Mm-hmm. You could have a total breakdown. So it's not only the physical immunities with an ailment, but it's also the emotional. This too shall pass. This too, and you know, and we ultimately learn from mistakes. If you're trying to learn how to ski and you're afraid of falling, you'll never be a decent skier. You have to learn that, okay, get up and I'll try it. And you know what? If I stay at this, I think I'll improve. Other people have. And, you know, I've been lucky. I never had a career path. And I pity those who do, you know, unless they're really gifted in some area and can help the world. Somebody who's going to save lives as a heart surgeon. Hallelujah, if he or she knows path right away. But, you know, I've always been, doors have opened, and I've been willing to step into other things. You know, since I can tell you the first time I produced something as opposed to writing or directing, a friend walked into my office one day and said, I have a deal for something, to do a reality show long before there were reality shows. And I said, that's great. He said, except I have no ideas. And off the top of my head, I gave him, an idea came to me, and he said, that's great, I'll be right back. Came back in and he said, we have a deal. And I said, what's this we stuff? He said, you'll produce it, I'll direct it. And I said, but he said, no, you'll be great. I'm not necessarily a nervous type. I got very nervous the night before we were to finally shoot. We went through all through pre-production, everything went great. The night before we were to shoot, I couldn't sleep. I was in a cold sweat. For some, you're vulnerable at night in a way that you're not during the day very often. Albert Camus, the great French writer, when asked, did he believe in God? He said, except at 3 in the morning when you're lying in bed. And anyway, I convinced that people were going to come up to me during the shoot and ask, what have you produced before? Which nobody was going to do because everybody's far too busy. But, you know, my monkey mind was racing. Oh, my gosh, what am I going to say? After the first day of shooting, I had no problem sleeping because I had an answer. Somebody said, what have you produced? I could say, yesterday.
Beautiful.
You know, so The monkey mind gets in the way. Meditation can silence the monkey mind. Meditation
wow.
can get us away. You know, what is the world going to fall apart if I don't produce this properly? Life will
of
somehow
course.
Go on. And you know what? I've been moderately successful in most things I've done. Why am I going to suddenly fail in this?
But beautiful.
Those are,
beautiful.
You know, those, yeah, I mean, that's the meditation is a way to step back. You know, what's the key to meditation? The first step is the breath. If you sit back mm-hmm. and breathe, you know, all this flutter, all this craziness suddenly starts to subside. And you see,
mm-hmm.
oh my gosh, it's not like, you know, the Middle East will erupt in more violence if there's a problem on the set of the pilot I'm producing.
Mm-hmm,
you know
what I mean? Mm-hmm, I know. yeah,
it's
I know.
Hardly
and,
a terrorist
you know, we can,
act.
It is. You're so right. And I think that as we begin to keep having these sorts of conversation, it's going to build more of an awareness that, yeah, carry on with your life. But I think one of the areas I would tweak is just be mindful that the vibe that you bring into every action does impact the environment around you. So, you
well,
know,
you
even
know, that's
if,
physics. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Exactly, but there are a lot of people who don't know physics. There are a lot of people who don't know physics, and we have to get them amplified into the awareness of that. And I think that's really,
how does
really
it
quite
feel,
important.
How do people? I was in an office the other day, and I was introduced to somebody, and the woman who was introducing me to this new person said, "You'll like Alan." And she said, "Oh, that's nice." She said, "Alan's the only one who comes in here who always says hello to everybody." And I said, "Why don't other people say hello?" And the woman I was speaking to, whose name is Joanne, said, "I don't know why they don't say hello, but people just walk through to see the one person that they're supposed to talk to, and they ignore everybody else." And she said, "It makes us all feel so good when you walk in and say hello. What does it cost me to say hello? I like these people." And if that brightens their day, what's that going to do to the next person
exactly.
next person with whom they have to speak to?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. And I think we need more Alans in the world because that you know it's that simple, Alan. It's as simple as just saying hello or smiling, and that can create a ripple effect of something positive. Geez, I just want to keep talking to you, and now I'm even going to call you because I've got some really cute projects that I think you'd be awesome with.
Terrific.
Yeah, I mean, as you continue with your journey now from this point onwards, you've got the beard and all of that coming out and just all these other things. Is there a life quote that you could say, you know, I'm living by this at this point in my life?
I am living a dream.
Mm.
My next project, one of the things that shaped me more than anything else, I, as a young kid, knowing not a soul, I moved to France. At the age of 19, I moved to Paris. I hustled a gig writing the Paris section of a travel guide for Simon & Schuster for the youth market. They were going to do it, and I got the Paris section, which meant that I was the only impoverished kid in Paris with not just an expense account, but also a mandate to do everything. And I vowed I want to come back, and I made my first short film in Paris. And I said, one of my dreams would be to come back and make a feature film in France. And in September, I will be shooting a film that I scripted based upon a short story of mine that was published a couple of years ago in Paris and in and around Saint-Tropez. So dreams come true.
Beautiful. Congratulations on that, my dear. You can keep it up.
Thank
you for sharing that. And leave us with a website that you would like the listeners to get a hold of you where they can get the book and other information about
well,
you.
Well, the easiest way to get the book, even though I love independent bookstores, the easiest way is Amazon, S-W-Y-E-R, A-L-A-N, S-W-Y-E-R. As I said, they're taking pre-orders but actually delivering them, much to my amazement. It's Harvard Square Editions. If you want to, since you mentioned Spiritual Revolution, that's available through Amazon. Amazon Prime as a download or the DVD. El Boxeo, similarly, Amazon Prime. And